Well, so is putting down a small deposit on the house that you want to buy, is that the way to go? Today we're going to take a look. Stay tuned for Prudent Money. Good afternoon, this is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. Well, from first home buyers to investors looking for property, we have tips and advice when it comes to buying and selling real estate. Mortgage consultant Mark Pfeiffer is here today to give us a few tips and talk about what we need to know. Mark, welcome to Prudent Money.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, we always like to start with this. What's going on in the real estate markets? Obviously, keeping a firm grasp of what's happening with interest rates. And obviously, that's at the core of business because people are staring at those higher, much higher payments. I mean, it's really interesting if you think about what people are paying, and you painfully know these numbers, I'm sure. What people were paying for a 30-year mortgage today versus what they were paying a year ago, maybe not even a year ago, maybe a little further back than that. Big difference.
Very big difference. I mean, we've gone from what we saw just 2 years ago in the threes up to the eights. Then we came to the sevens. And just for a hint and moment in time earlier this year, we hit somewhere in the high to mid sixes. And now rates over the last few weeks, month, give or take, have been back in the high sixes, low sevens. So it's been fairly volatile, but it feels like we're settling down around that 7%, have been for the last couple of weeks, been, again, a little high, a little low. But you're absolutely right. It's been that 7%, and the experts, and I'm going to use air quotes here. I know we're on the radio, but experts think that supposedly rates are going to come down to the mid to low sixes by the end of this year. Time will tell.
It's interesting because this is just an hour looking in, but it seems like people who in the real estate business, they're getting kind of accustomed to this 7% rate and they're getting comfortable, or is that not the case?
Well, what I found really interesting is when rates hit even the high sixes, they came down from the eights to the high sixes, there was a noticeable, very noticeable uptick in business as far as the amount of activity, the leads, things of that nature. So it was amazing how just that little increase to go from a 7-point-something to a 6-point-something, it was amazing to see how much of that just spurred this new activity. Because this would have been, you know, January, February time period, typically not a real strong activity time in the market. So to your point, I think folks are starting to realize that rates may not go back to 3% and 4%. And so they saw an opportunity when rates were back in the sixes. And again, we've kind of been in that 6 to 7 range, the high sixes, low sevens, now bouncing around for the last month or two. So it is interesting how just that little change can change some of that buying power.
Yeah, this is such a complex environment, and you and I were just talking about this earlier before the program, is that there is one aspect of this whole booming real estate market that you can't get rid of, and it's supply and demand. I mean, that is what it is. That's a real issue. But you look at it and go, well, okay, but is it a bubble? I don't know if it's a bubble. Is it what? You don't really know what to call it. And it would be interesting to say, go a year and a half down the road and be able to look back and go, okay, what happened?
I don't know what to answer. I know it's not a bubble, at least in my opinion, not a bubble, in the sense that if you look at the numbers, supply and demand, there is just a massive amount of folks out there that need housing. And apartments aren't being built fast enough. Homes are not being built fast enough because what the builders have learned. And so a lot of this does stem back from the, you know, mortgage meltdown days when the crash happened. Builders learned a big lesson. And so now when rates hit 8, they stop. They don't just keep building, and their commitments are smaller and their takeouts are quicker than what they've been in the past, and they don't go as big on these positions. So the builders have absolutely been quicker to turn it off in this last cycle, the last 3-4 years. And so it keeps that shortage in existence.
Right.
So they're not building to the capacity. They're not building for I hope rates come down next year and therefore we're going to build, because it does take them it's a 2-year lookout. I mean, I don't envy the building community to put that much money on the line for what they think the market's going to be in 2 to 3 years. It's remarkable. God love them. But the reality is they've learned a lesson and they've not built this oversupply. So there's not this glut. And so supply and demand, people, I mean, these millennials are coming of age to buy homes. Like the average age is early to mid 30s, 34, 36, the numbers keep changing. But that's where the peak of all these young people are. And they're coming online to some of these household formations and there's no houses to form. So that's keeping supply and demand. It's keeping prices high. I don't love that prices are this high. What we were talking about is what do you do? I don't have an answer for that. Prices are going to keep getting, especially here in North Texas, they're just going to keep getting more expensive in the foreseeable future unless something mega, mega big happens. But the reality is there's a long runway and house prices are going to keep getting more and more expensive year after year. And they have been. Even in the last 3 or 4 years, people are like, I'm waiting for the crash. They just keep getting more expensive.
Yeah, oh, you could speculate so many different stories and how they're going to end. It's just it's pretty interesting. I mean, because if you look at it from the standpoint of what would happen if you went north of 8%, that could get a little dicey.
Yeah, you put rates at, you know, the stories you know better than I do. You put rates back when they were 16%, 18%.
Oh, yeah.
People were still buying homes, but in today's market.
Excuse me, Mark, I'm not that old.
You know them better than I do.
I was a young child and that was happening.
You still know them better than I do. Parents would say, man, I remember when I bought my house and rates were this back in the 80s and 90s, right?
But I do remember the 8.5% mortgage rate.
Absolutely.
On my first house.
Absolutely. And that's where, again, I suspect the part that will come to fruition would be suddenly the more creative financing comes back in play.
Right.
The arms would probably be more prevalent. If rates are at that, then there's a whole nother problem at hand from an economic standpoint. So what does that do for pricing and all that? So to the point where rates are, where I think they're going, I do think they will come down. I don't think significantly, but enough to where maybe people get that mindset to say, you know what? It's 6 is a good percent, right? 6.x. That's historically, rates are between 6 and 8. If you go back to when the Federal Reserve was created, rates have historically been between 6 and 8.
It's all perspective. And people kind of have lost a little bit of perspective, but I think that it's all about what's in the comfort zone. And I think you're right, that 6% range right there is probably where people are. We'll just have to see.
I'm mid-40s, so you figure, you know, those of us that have got out of, you know, whatever you're doing into the real world back in the early 2000s, we never saw a 7%. This is the first time in my career. I've been doing this for 20-plus years. It's the first time the 7% is on the spectrum. So all of a sudden, you're like, oh, man, that's so expensive. You saw 8, you're like, holy smokes. But we've never even seen it.
Right.
But historically, to your point about perspective, it's between 6 and 8%. So if the housing market's going to continue to be strong because people are buying, the reality is rates will change, but prices in this moment are still going up. So the messaging is buy a house because it's your home, right? It's a wonderful investment. The average homeowner's got a 40x net worth compared to a renter. Like, it is the easiest and best way to create wealth in this country is to buy and own a home. You got to pay rent somewhere, so you might as well pay rent to yourself and own it. You know, the interest rate on rent's 100%. So while we don't like it, you got to do it. I mean, it's a wonderful thing to come out and be the king of your castle. Like, that's awesome. And if you happen to make money doing it, good for you.
You know, it's interesting. I was thinking about that mortgage that I have was at 8.5%, and I refinanced it down like 5 or 6 times. But anyway, I ended up at a adjustable rate mortgage at 2.5%.
Isn't that wild?
And then I realized, you know what, I gotta lock this in. So I locked it in at 3.25%. I mean, you just get used to that. Like, this should be normal. but you can't keep rates down, as we know now, can't keep things down that compressed that far down and get a good, great outcome because we got what we have right now.
Well, and you and I just had a conversation just catching up with one another and fear came up, right? We're just talking business plan and fearing and all this other stuff. Well, but the psychology of a buyer, whether it's first time or the multiple, somebody out there today in the market, the fear is you don't want to pay too much for something. You don't want to look dumb. Everybody loves talking about, I had a 2-point this and I'm so smart, I converted it to a 3-point or 4-point.
Right.
You don't want to be the idiot that says, oh, I bought here when I shouldn't have, whether it's a rate issue. And so that psychology, you just have to take some of the logic and put it above that fear, right? The emotion part, take the emotion out of it. Homeownership is amazing. Dallas-Fort Worth is amazing. Like, we are a wonderful place. So the fear of I don't want to buy high, well, again, the rates, they will change. They will change. And if rates go up and up and up and never touch this point, that means today's your lowest rate you're going to get. So buy. If rates go down, terrific, refinance. But house prices, more than likely going to keep going up in Dallas-Fort Worth for the foreseeable future.
Not to give you a Rolaids moment or anything, but what about a situation where you have the you get a hit to the economy goes into recession, and rates stay where they are or they go a little bit higher? I mean, anything. I don't know what you'd have to really create that situation, but that would be interesting.
It would be. I'm very blessed that I grew up here in Dallas-Fort Worth, because I remember coming out of college. I went to UT in Austin, and for a moment I was asking my mom, I was like, what do you think about this job in Phoenix, Arizona? She's like, I don't know. You can do Phoenix, but the Dallas-Fort Worth market, and she kind of make it the same points that you and I know, right? So recession happens, rates stay where they are. I'm still confident in Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm still bullish on Dallas-Fort Worth.
Right. You know, I would agree.
Geographically, we're in the center of the country. You know, from a climate standpoint, we can operate year-round. We're not like Minnesota where it shuts down for 3 months in the winter for real estate. You got a great and wonderful diverse economy. So, yes, recession, it doesn't mean it would be recession everywhere. I still feel like Dallas-Fort Worth will come out better than most markets.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining me today. Mark Pfeiffer stopped by the studio, talk a little bit about what's happening in the wonderful world of real estate and mortgages. You know, one of the things that you start to see is very aggressive marketing. And I always got a kick out of some of this, the aggressive marketing back in 07 and 08. I mean, not 08, but prior to that, that was that people were talking about. You know, we can get this rate for you, and you look at that rate and go, but Mark said that rate was that high, but that much higher. The one thing that I want to make sure that we always keep in front of people is the fact that you're working off the same numbers that the individual who's talking about a much, much lower rate. You're both looking at the same numbers, but you're going to pay for those rates somewhere. Talk a little bit about that.
So marketing, to your point, Bob, there's a company, and I won't mention them, and everybody knows them. You see the commercials. I feel like they're a marketing company that happens to do mortgages. They're just really good at it. Good for them.
They are.
Good for them. Some I agree with, some I don't. But to your point about the aggressive marketing, you know, can be good, can be bad. So the hardest part we have, at least in my group, is just making sure we educate the consumer. Exactly to your point. If we're all going to the same bucket, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, there's going to be some difference from one company to another. Maybe one company runs a little more efficiently than the other, but we're talking not a ton of money to where there shouldn't be some wide gap. So what we have seen is a lot of folks are going to advertise this super low rate, this incredibly low, like below market rate. What the consumer may not realize is there's a cost for that, right? This isn't a company that's just found free money that they're giving away, but it's just analyzing that cost to make sure it's the right one. And the consumer thinks, and I understand they think they can do this, but you do this transaction once every 7 years, right? If you refinance, maybe it's a little more than that, but the reality is you don't do it often. So as a consumer, make sure you work with a professional can help you compare apples to apples, because you're right, the aggressive marketing that says we can do this and somebody else can't, you should not see a very big discrepancy between, you know, A, B, or C. And if there is, for better or for worse, you should at least dive deeper. I wouldn't just dismiss that person. I'd find out why it's either that much better or that much higher, because it's probably just not apples and oranges, or it's probably not apples to apples.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you just definitely got to be careful about with these mortgages. You know, one of the things that I saw a big credit union advertising a 3% down mortgage. I thought about that for a second, because I've heard of, you know, more around the 10% down, and then you do something to offset the other 10% to make the 20 or whatever. But the 3% down, it seems like if a person could only put 3% down, maybe they shouldn't be getting a mortgage. Where does it make sense on an underwriting standpoint, and what kind of hoops do you have to jump through to secure a 3% down payment on a mortgage?
It's a great question. So believe it or not, they're still 0% down, which is wild. And they're typically, what's interesting about the 0% is, aside from, you know, the veteran, right? So right. Veteran financing, VA financing, you can do zero down. God bless them. They deserve every bit of that. But even the zero, the 3.5% down payments, Fannie and Freddie have their 3%. Fannie and Freddie, so Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, you know, the government agencies are quasi, you know, in that sense. But FHA is a government agency, can do 3.5% down. There are bond programs out there that allow somebody to come in with 0%. What's funny, Bob, is those are first-time homebuyer programs, a lot of them. are dubbed as first-time homebuyer programs. So these aren't experienced, you know, tons of money in the bank folks. These are the folks coming in. So the answer is, should you be giving them a mortgage? Look, we qualify them, right? This isn't like back in the early 2000s. These folks have good credit, good job. You know, there are tighter restrictions to get into those programs, but they're there to create homeownership because homeownership is just so powerful. As I mentioned earlier, it just helps you build wealth. It helps the economy. I'm going to Home Depot. I'm spending a lot more money on that. I'm spending a lot more money on services. Guy to mow my lawn, which helps them. So the velocity of money kicks in to where the dollar I spend with the guy that mows my lawn spends the money to go to the dry cleaner, spends the money. So all that helps circulate and create a wonderful economy for folks. So the 3% down programs, to answer your question, whether it's 0, 3, 3.5, 5, they are sponsored by Normal. Like, they're not getting outside the box. So what the big misconception is people think is, I need that 20%. You don't, right? You can get in. So the question I think is more important, which is, what is the budget? You know, what's your financial wherewithal? Do you have the savings in the bank? I don't love the idea of somebody getting into a home, putting down 3% and not having anything left, and their disposable income each month is close to none.
But they wouldn't write that though, right?
There's programs out there that can make things happen. I mean, I'm not saying it's a lot. I'm not saying it's excessive, but give me somebody young professional, just got his first job or her first job coming out of college, and they're making money and they've saved up 3%, good for them. And they do have disposable income to where they have an extra $1,000, $2,000 left over every month when all the bills are paid. Not a lot of money in the bank, but they're young. Good for them.
Right, right.
Again, I think that's a good bet.
So let's talk a little bit about credit scores. What kind of a credit score do you need, or a range do you need to be in for the 30-year mortgage versus nothing down?
So,
or are they about the same?
So the credit scores, just to be very clear, mortgage credit scores are different than the consumers.
Right.
Right. So as a consumer, if you're listening to this right now and you're like, I saw, you know, Credit Karma, or my credit card told me I have this, those scores are higher than what the mortgage industry has. So the mortgage industry just uses a different grading scale. So understand when I say like your credit score needs to be X, realize that you could be seeing a 50 to 70 point drop, air quotes, drop in your credit when a mortgage person pulls it. Your credit score didn't drop. We just don't use the same grading scale. So to answer your question, what kind of, like FHA is 3.5% down. You can get into FHA with a low 600 credit score. Now, that's not to say, hey, you got a low 600 and it's automatic. Tell me why it's 600. Because divorce is a huge reason. Divorce and medical issues are typically the two biggest reasons why credit gets just torn up. So you can't help the fact that, you know, you had some medical problems last year or year before last, you got in a car wreck and all this stuff, and or that you got divorced and the ex ended up doing a whole bunch of stuff right before the divorce is finalized and your credit's gone to trash. So to answer your question, you can still get in with less than stellar credit in these 3 to 3.5% programs. You just have to have a good reason. For the FHA, it's a manual underwrite where a human can say, I want to do this. For Fannie and Freddie, it's usually got to be more of an automated. So it's a big picture. If you have money in the bank, it's going to help compensate for a lower credit score.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it varies. There's no real answer outside of it. Just depends.
Depends.
It depends.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Thanks so much for joining me today. You know I do appreciate it. If you want more information on Mark, MortgageMark.com, you can get a lot of great information on that site. Let's talk a little bit about retirement assets. Does an underwriter take a look at retirement assets and say, well, you only have $2,000 invested in your retirement account. That's not a good thing. Or how do they handle that from a qualifying standpoint?
So I would say the industry doesn't look at it as a negative, meaning you only have $2,000 versus you have 20, that's considered a plus, right? So my personal belief, this is Mark Pfeiffer's opinion, not that of anybody else's, but I don't love the idea of somebody tapping retirement to buy a home. If you want to borrow against it, more power to you, because it's just a loan you're going to repay yourself. But in terms of the assets themselves, if you're not of retirement age, so 59 and a half or less, they're only going to use 60% of that, 60 to 70% depends on the program, but more than likely about 60 to 70% of that value of saying it's in there. So if you got 10,000 in your retirement account, they're going to treat it as if you really only have about $6,000 or $7,000 of that number in terms of assets in the bank.
Let's talk a little bit about saving from a saving standpoint. Your first time home buyer, you're looking at some of these different programs. What's the underwriter wanting to see from a savings standpoint? Emergency savings is a good example.
So a good rule of thumb is 2 to 3 months of payments in the bank. And what's interesting, which I disagree with on the industry, but if your mortgage payment's going to be $2,500, they want to see about $5,000, maybe $7,500 left in the bank when you're done. After closing costs, down payment, all that's done. But the reality is, it just seems, you know as well as I do, life happens. But that 2 month reserve is kind of the minimum that they're going to want to see. So reserves means, again, what's your monthly mortgage payment? Not to say that was your electric bill, was your water, your food, your credit card. None of that matters. It's just 2 months of whatever you're about to pay on your mortgage. They want to see that left in the bank and some asset, whether it's retirement or something like that, because that comes into play. They want to have that reserve left over for that cushion of about 2 months.
We always talk about if you're going to be in the market to buy a house, go see the mortgage person first. Make sure that you know exactly what you're up against. I would think that unless they just have great credit right off the bat, that it's going to take some time to do the things you have to do to get your credit where you need it to be.
Oh, absolutely. From a credit standpoint, if you think there are concerns, absolutely should do it. But I'll give an example. My wife, who's very organized, way more than me, God love her. When we bought our house, this is many moons ago, but she had a $12,000 credit card on her credit that was not hers.
Right.
It wasn't her parents. It wasn't hers. Fortunately, whoever's credit card it was paying on time, but it was there. So we did it. That was our first step, was getting pre-qualified before we go look and get excited and find a home. So we did that first, and it gives you time. So when you have time, you have options. So the mortgage person, yes, I'm biased, but I think the mortgage professional should be the first contact, because then you at least know what to expect. You know how to budget. You know what the monthly payment's going to be. You know what the out-of-pocket's going to be. And then from that, you know how and what to go look at, because the worst thing you can do is just go spend your time, your money, your effort. I shouldn't say money, but your time and effort, nights and weekends, finding the house, falling in love with it, only to find out it's not something you can or want to do. So get the numbers in line first and then go have fun.
This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. Let's talk a little bit as we wrap things up. How are home builders doing?
Wonderful compared to others. I'm not saying they're killing it, but the reality is that with rates where they are, what the home builders typically have compared to a normal seller is the home builders have no emotion. It is a business. They're there to build and to sell. And unlike a seller, a builder has to sell a home. They cannot and do not want that house once it's completed for that long, right? It's an expense, whereas a homeowner is using it. So Joe homeowner doesn't have to sell. I mean, maybe he does if he's getting transferred, but I say as a whole, you move because you want to move. So the builders have this money, this profit, to where they can sell a home and say, you know what? I'm going to use some of that money to then buy down the interest rate, because that's the biggest barrier right now, is saying, what is my payment? As much as we all want to say interest rate's important, but the reality is it's the result. It's the payment that matters. So home builders can say, we're going to put this money, some of this profit, towards helping the homeowners buy down their rate, to where then they get a manageable payment that they'd want and need to make it happen. So the home builders are doing very well in this market because, again, when rates are at 7, they can sit there and buy down the rate to as little. I've seen some in the 4s.
Really?
So if you can get somebody that says, man, I can get a 4.99, I'm going to buy that house that, let's make up a number, that $500,000 home is really only like a 450 home or 425 because of the payment. Mm-hmm. It's so much lower. It feels like it's a 425, 450, but it's a $500,000 amazing home. So the home builders are doing very well in that sense, and that they have the ability to throw that money. Whereas a seller, Joe homeowner, right? He's not going to say, I'm going to put down 20 grand or 30 grand towards buying down your rate. Joe wants that 20, and if he can't get it, he's not selling. So that's why the home builders have an advantage in this market.
A lot of creative financing going on, I'll tell you.
Fun stuff, good times.
Well, hey, great to have you on, Mark. This is Bob Brooks, and you are listening to the Prudent Money Radio Show. If you've got a question for me, please go to the website, www.prudentmoney.com, and send it in, because we are all out of time. Till we do meet again next time, keep the faith and have a great rest of the day.